This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We have all heard of Harriet Tubman of Maryland, the best known of the Underground Railroad's conductors. But the state of Michigan was a crucial stop on the Underground Railroad. Before and during the Civil War, many Michiganders helped slaves escape from the South to freedom in Canada. And women were very important in smuggling these runaway slaves, women such as Laura Smith Haviland. She is one of the outstanding abolitionists from our state. Tia Miles is with us. She's professor of the Department of African American Studies at the University of Michigan. Tia, why have most of us never heard of Laura Haviland?
Well, I think that some Michiganders have heard of her, but in the larger scheme of things in Underground Railroad history, people don't tend to think of people in the Midwest as being prominent in that movement. They tend to think of Boston, Philadelphia, and New York.
But Michigan geographically was so important just because people could get either across the border at Detroit or across the border at Port Huron. You would think more attention would be focused on Michigan's folks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the focus has been on the Northeast in part because there's a larger symbolic meaning attached to Boston in particular as the birthplace of liberty. So people continue that narrative thread into this period of the Underground Railroad and think about Boston and New England, as opposed to the Midwest, which, as you said, was really important because of its location.
Just why is this wife and mother from Adrian so important to the Underground Railroad?
Laura Haviland was an incredible woman, and she's someone who faced daunting challenges that you and I don't think, could ever have imagined. She and her family moved from New York to Michigan in 1829, and they were settlers on what they viewed as a frontier. She did heavy domestic labor at the same time that she was raising children, and she was a very faithful Quaker in the area. And over time, she and her husband and her brother started to really think about race issues. She was greatly influenced by another woman in the area named Elizabeth Chandler, who was an anti-slavery poet who had moved from Philadelphia. And together, Haviland and Chandler formed what was the first anti-slavery society in Michigan. It was the Logan Female Anti-Slavery Society.
They were really leading the way. Mm-hmm. How far did Laura Haviland go in helping slaves get to full freedom in Canada? Did she face danger?
Oh, my goodness. Laura Haviland's story is so incredible. She is someone who, in 1845, faced the death of her husband, her parents, and her youngest child from an epidemic that swept through their settlement on the Raisin River. She was a woman who had to run her farm alone with her remaining seven children at a time when women were not expected to be able to do that kind of thing, when everybody questioned her ability. And at the same time that she was doing this, a fugitive slave named George Taylor showed up on her doorstep, and she knew that she had to help him. She had dreams in this period in which she felt that God was telling her that he would protect her if she did his mission, which would be to help slaves escape. And so she left her youngest children in the care of her oldest children, and she traveled all over the Midwest. She went down to Ohio. She even went into Kentucky to try to help slaves escape, which was a very rare thing among women, period, and especially among white women. And she also went to Canada.
And she actually had a reward out, didn't the Southern slave owners $3,000 for her capture?
They did. That's because there was a family named the Hamiltons who were living on Haviland's farmland. And she did this frequently. She invited people who were escaping to come and settle on her land. She would help them, and they would do work on the property. Some Tennesseans came back to capture what they viewed as their human property. Laura Haviland got wind of it. She went, again, a woman alone, to confront them and managed to help the family escape to Canada. And the slaveholders were so upset that they pulled a gun on her on a train, and she stood up to them and told them that she was not afraid because they had no power here, meaning in Michigan. They were no longer in Tennessee, she told them.
What a tough lady. Mm-hmm. I can tell just from watching you talk about her how much you admire this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I admire her because she was someone who was fighting against the odds in her time. I mean, now we're all against slavery. We know it was a terrible moral wrong. At the time that she was so active on the Underground Railroad, it was actually against the law for people, even in the North, to help slaves who were escaping. So after the Fugitive Slave Law was passed in 1850, people in the North who helped slaves escape could lose their own property, could be thrown in jail. Even Haviland's friends were thrown in jail. Nevertheless, she was willing to leave her own children in the care of others to fight for what she believed was justice. It's an incredible story.
Taya, because Laura Smith Haviland was white, did she inspire more whites in Michigan to be part of the cause and to get involved?
Well, there's certainly a number of people who admired her in Michigan and around the Midwest. They thought of her as someone who was a leader in the abolitionist movement. And I think it was a combination of the force of her conviction, her deep belief that God was actually telling her to do the things that she was doing, and also the fact that she was, most of the time, an educator and a school teacher. I mean, she and her brother had founded that school.
Talk about that school.
The school was raised in an institute, and it was an interracial school, the first of its kind in the state of Michigan. It was modeled after Oberlin College, and the first principals and teachers were from Oberlin. So Haviland was someone who wouldn't necessarily have appeared to other people in her community as a radical rabble-rouser. She was a widowed woman with small children. She was very faithful, first to the Quaker faith, then to the Methodist faith. She was a school teacher. And I think that that allowed people to see her way of thinking a little more easily. She seemed just like them, except that she believed that everyone should have equal rights in this country.
What does history tell us, Taya? How did Laura Haviland's experience differ from white men who were abolitionists at the time? Did being female help or hurt her?
Well, at the time that she was doing all of her valiant work, it hurt her because women were not expected to be off on their own on the road. Women were not expected to be even speaking in public. They weren't expected to be involved in political issues. She was doing all of these things. And in fact, some of her fellow abolitionists even kind of gently criticized her about this. So Levi and Catherine Coffin, famous abolitionists who were in Cincinnati at a time when Laura Haviland was very active, pointed out that she probably really shouldn't be crossing the Ohio River into Kentucky to help slaves escape. And she told them that she saw no geographical lines in her Bible.
The National Park Service is hosting its annual conference on the Underground Railroad in Detroit. It's going to run from July 16th to the 20th. I know you're going to be speaking. And the theme is Women and the Underground Railroad. How do you think Laura Haviland's life resonates with us right now in 2014?
I think she is an incredible role model because right now we are surrounded by so many social issues, environmental issues, great problems that we have to face as individuals and as a society. And I think we're often casting about wondering, what can we as individuals do? Well, she is someone who showed that as an individual, even an individual who is in a situation where the odds are against you, you really can make a difference.
Fascinating story. Taya Miles is with the Department of African American Studies at the University of Michigan. And again, the National Park Service Annual Conference on the Underground Railroad in Detroit will be held from July 16th to the 20th. Taya, thank you so much for talking with us on Stateside.
Thanks for having me.